Welcome back to the UFO and Aliens podcast. I'm Rick Black.
And I am Robert Wiley. How are we doing this week, Rick?
It's been a rough week for me, I got to tell you.
Yeah.
Went on Monday, I had to call in. I had a fever. I actually got up to about 103.4. I didn't know that adults could have fever that high. Ended up in the hospital with an IV because I got dehydrated and they wouldn't let me leave until they got my temperature down to about 101.
You're not supposed to be getting that sick in the summertime or as summer's approaching, right?
It was a rough week for me. I'm still recovering, so I'm not going to do a whole lot of talking. That's good because they gave you a homework assignment.
You did give me a homework assignment.
Did you know, I've heard this somewhere, if you read one UFO book, you are then officially a ufologist.
That's cool. So now I'm a ufologist.
Yeah, you're about as much a ufologist as I am. Because, you know, I have my book right here.
Right.
It's another guy that supposedly worked with crash UFOs.
Right.
Clifford Stone. I already did an episode on him. I don't know if you listened to it.
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. I did. So you know all about him.
I did. I know.
Yeah. The UFOs used to come in and help him with his homework.
Yeah, well, I wish I had somebody to come help me with my homework sometimes.
Yeah, no kidding.
Especially when I was younger.
Yeah, well, yeah. You got homework now? Besides what I'm giving you?
I feel like I always have some kind of homework going on, right? But yeah, at least I wasn't sick like you were this week.
Still have that weight of homework on you. I thought I'd get rid of that after I graduated from college.
It never ends.
Never ends.
It never ends. But at least this is fun homework, right?
Yeah, this is a blast. Yeah, absolutely.
We're not necessarily getting graded on it by each other.
Well, if we get graded, it's some people could put in some comments or something like that.
That's true.
Yeah. Some of them I take seriously and some of them I don't.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to report to my mom and say, Mom, I got one star.
That does no one any good, right?
All right. So let's get us started. We're talking about Bob Lazar this week.
Yeah, fascinating guy, really. I mean, there's been a lot of information on there. He's been on some very famous podcasts over the years that kind of got this subject going once again and kind of in the spotlight and really broke the news back in 1989 when he was kind of a whistleblower, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Before maybe we even termed that whistleblower.
Before the David Grush big thing, yeah.
Yeah, so fascinating guy. There's a lot of information about him on there, you know, all over the web and through documentaries and things of that nature. And so what I did was read his autobiography, Dreamland.
Yeah.
And some interesting stuff in there. And he was an interesting guy, even more so than I think I've seen in some of the documentaries. Mm-hmm. He was a little bit of a prankster.
Oh, yeah?
You know, he kind of liked to mess around. He kind of got bored easily, you know, talking about his time at Los Alamos and things like that.
And
joking with some of those military folks. But definitely very inquisitive as a scientist, for sure. And I think is what I kind of learned out of the whole deal, some of the things I didn't realize is he was a little disenfranchised when he left Los Alamos. And him and his wife kind of started their own businesses there in Las Vegas.
Okay.
And did you know that one of the businesses they owned back then was a brothel, a legal brothel in Las Vegas?
I think I knew something about that. I did look into I told you I wasn't going to do any research, but this afternoon I looked into it a little bit so I'd have something to respond to.
Right.
And he did have a couple run-ins with the law, and one of them was about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely a colorful character, is a scientist, seemed fascinated a little bit with the Manhattan Project and those scientists and what they did, had his own jet car. He built this thing himself.
Okay. I remember seeing a picture of him. It's this nerdy guy leaning up against like a blue Corvette. That's the image that I have of him. So it doesn't surprise me that he made his own jet car.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And he even had some people there in town. It was when he was in Los Alamos, wanted to do a newspaper story. And I think this has been very well documented and covered. And he really thought it'd be no big deal. And after he fired those jet engines up on that thing, well, then here comes the police. Here comes all these complaints. And they had to tell him, you're not doing that anymore. Which he was good with at the time. He really didn't like a lot of attention, which is amazing because now he's got all of this attention and he really kind of kept to himself.
So much for not wanting attention. He kind of did a little bit of that on his own, right?
Yeah. I mean, some of that.
I know at first when he came out, he came out anonymously.
Right.
But I don't know how long was it before he just said, okay, I'm Bob.
You know, if memory serves me correct, it was about 10, 15 years ago. He finally said, it's not going to stop. They know who I am. Anytime he talked to people, he felt after he would go and do some of these interviews, he would notice his home was burglarized.
Okay. Yeah. I read more about Area 51 than I did about him.
Right.
But I think he came out to protect himself.
Right.
Yeah, thought, if I stay anonymous and then I disappear, no one's going to know anything.
Exactly. And he said even the burglarization, they wouldn't steal anything. It was more mind kind of games that they would play. They would move furniture around. It was just to let them know.
Yeah, like the CIA.
Right. I'm watching you. We know what you're doing. We know who you're talking to. Knock it off. Kind of a deal.
Yeah. There have been some people that have, Airfingers quote, committed suicide by jumping out the window, but also left heel marks on the floor leading right up to the window. Yeah.
So there's always a lot of controversy where Bob Lazar is concerned, for sure. You know, he said he was brought in to reverse engineer an extraterrestrial craft, which he says in his book, he really didn't know what that meant. You know, he gets a lot of secretive stuff going in. They would just call him, you know, out of the blue, almost like a firefighter or a doctor being on call. And he would go to McCarran Airport, get on the jets that everyone's very well aware
right,
of.
Right.
And fly out. And sometimes it would be to do paperwork. And sometimes it would be to take medical exams. And what I found fascinating about the medical exam part was, according to him, his claims were that they'd ran these tests because they had some people working on things that were similar, and they'd had some allergic type reactions. And him being a scientist, obviously, he comes back with, well, what kind of reactions? And of course, their response is, well, we can't really talk about that. Now, I don't know. Now, when I'm reading that, I'm thinking that would have sent up huge red flags for me.
Yeah.
But I'm not a scientist. So I think as a scientist, and with his background working at Los Alamos and working with the government before, he was probably used to some of that. And I think that's where a lot of the skeptics that he gets and the criticism he gets comes from, like, well, I wouldn't have had anything to do with that right then and there. That would have been a red flag. I would have been out of there.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think for him being around that type of environment where it's really top secret classified, and he was waiting for a big top secret clearance at this S4, I believe they called it. I'll have to double check on that. Mm-hmm. But it was Groom Lake, or what we all know as Area 51, yeah, you know, to reverse engineer these propulsion systems that defied gravity, or were they anti-gravity?
Right. Let's talk about Groom Lake. Mm-hmm. Used to be a lake.
Right.
Dried up lake bed. It's flat. It's hard. And they used that as an emergency, like 1942 when war broke out.
Right.
They just kind of a base sprung up, and they didn't really have to pave any runways. They could just land right there.
Right.
So that's where it all started. But since then, what do you guys know? You know anything about what they've done there?
Oh, there's all kinds of speculation about what's going on.
Well, I did look into it because I was like, well, I know that he was sent there to back engineer spacecraft, but that's where they did the spy plane.
Right.
The first spy plane.
Right. The B-52, or not the B-52, the U-2.
The U-2 spy plane, right. But there was one before that. Or was that the first one?
I know that's the one during the Cold War that really got the most attention, right?
Because that was shot down twice.
Right.
Well, not the same one, but that'd be a record or something. Then they had the A-12, which was higher and faster.
Right.
It's like three times the speed of sound.
As a result of the U-2 getting shot down, the A-12 wasn't built because it could take higher altitudes.
And it had to be made out of titanium,
right?
Which was, you know, crazy. And then the SR-71 Blackbird.
Right.
Again, a reconnaissance plane.
And that's fascinating because if you talk about the Blackbird, you'll talk about a lot of people back during that time period. That would have seemed very space alien type.
Yeah, so you're getting a lot of sightings from that area.
Right.
Hey, I saw something up in the sky. I don't know what it was. I think it was UFO.
Right.
Well, technically, it was unidentified because you don't know what it was.
Right.
But that doesn't mean it was a flying saucer. But the most fascinating thing to me about this area was during Vietnam, we were having a lot of trouble with the Soviet-provided MiG fighters against all of our fighters in Vietnam. So we needed to get our hands on a MiG.
Right.
So the Israelis had an Iraqi defect. He took a MiG, a MiG-21, and he defected to Israel. And so Israel sent us this MiG-21 to the U.S. Right. We sent it to Groom Lake, and they test flew it, and they pitted it against every single U.S. aircraft. Okay, now here's the really, really good part. That's what started Top Gun.
There you go.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's really cool. And since then, we've all wanted to be Tom Cruise.
Makes me want to go back and go to Annapolis, maybe become a pilot for the Navy. That sounds fun now.
Right. Back then, back in 1988 or whatever, that was...
Yeah, we didn't want to do that.
Yeah, we didn't do that, yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, really controversial figure as far as the UFOs, because, you know, he says he was recruited to come out and work there at S4, which is out at Area 51, which I love, as they put in the book, is the greatest known top secret base ever, right? Here's this top secret base.
Everybody knows about it.
But everybody knows about it. But what's fascinating, nobody really knows what goes on there. We've had several whistleblowers like Lazar. We've had people come out and tell us this or that. But the problem is, and they make a really good point about this in the book, that you almost have to accept that the fact that nobody's ever going to prove or disprove him. You have to listen to his story, and you have to kind of deduct with reasoning what you believe is true, if any of it, or if all of it's true.
Well, I think that's kind of what the government of the Air Force, they want. That's what they want you to do.
Right.
They're like, well, I kind of believe that they have aliens there. But then I kind of believe that they're making, you know, technological advances in our war machines.
Right.
They don't want you to know, but right. You got to be guessing back and forth.
It's that whole confusion, right? Yeah, somewhere,
it's misinformation.
Somewhere the truth kind of lies maybe in the middle, or parts of the truth lies in the middle there, mm-hmm. but we're just not for sure. And that's probably worked very well for the government over the years, especially since the Cold War. And they probably learned a lot of lessons during the Cold War.
Oh, yeah. They definitely use it.
That taught, you know, and here we are in a society now, and we're almost going back to the fundamental issue here in the United States of free speech. You know, what is free speech? What is protected? Where are we at on that?
Yeah.
And how is that happening?
I think we're losing our free speech.
Right. So what's amazing to me, too, in the book, I mean, it's a great book. I would recommend, if you ever have the opportunity to read it.
What was the name of it again?
It's called Dreamland.
Dreamland.
Yeah. And he goes into, you know, he had a lot of businesses. I was telling you about the brothel that he owned.
Yeah.
Him and his wife also did film processing. So really what happened when he left his first job there at Los Alamos, he was a little disenfranchised with everything. And he really said he just wanted to take a step back. And so he kind of got involved in these other businesses that he said they weren't necessarily mind-numbing, but there wasn't, to him, there wasn't a lot of work to put into it. And he really enjoyed it because him and his wife at the time got the opportunity to work from home, you know, before it was cool to work at home, you know, from home in the early 80s.
Before
that
was the thing.
Yeah, nobody ever did that. But he gets out there and kind of gets recruited to come back. And then the scientists took over in him, and he was really intrigued by all of that. And then he's reading these briefs. And what I found amazing about the briefs, when he's talking about while he was waiting for his clearance, they would just give him these overall briefs, mm-hmm. very generalized, you know, put him in this room that's no windows, no doors, nothing. You read this, we'll be back to get you in, you know, 5 hours. He said it was, you know, a foot tall of all these different things to read. Oh, and I thought it was amazing. You know, he said his eyes widened when he started mm-hmm. talking about the anti-propulsion systems and the anti-gravity. But what stood out to me is they identified where they believed this craft came from, what star system this craft came from.
Okay, that's cool.
And I'm like, how do they know that?
Yeah. Okay, that's where I run into, you know, when I'm researching mm-hmm. you know, a story. When I run into stuff like that, it flips the switch. I'm like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be really hard for me to convince you of anything else after that.
Right.
Or me.
So there was just really a lot of things like that throughout the, you know, his story, that some of it's really believable. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of go back to, Well, he's kind of admitted he's a little bit of a jokester, and he kind of likes to push the buttons a little bit and poke you with a pen just to see what a reaction is if he feels somewhat bored or uninterested in something.
Okay, so I got a question. I don't know if you have an answer for me. They're going to bring him in to reverse engineer alien spacecraft. So he's going to have really high level of education in engineering. Right. Where did he get that?
MIT.
And?
All I remember reading is MIT.
Okay. Because I read that he went to MIT and Caltech.
Okay.
But MIT and Caltech have no record of him going to school there.
And that was really my next thing. When people come in to start discrediting him, it's those little inconsistencies that kind of work against him. But we go back and we talk, could the government have gone in and scrubbed those records? Is that a possibility?
But then they have to go in and talk to everybody that went to school there at the same time. Because there were reporters that were going out and finding people that were at those schools saying, hey, do you know Bob Lazar? And they're all saying, no, never heard of him.
Right.
So they would have to reach out to them too.
Right. So is this guy the biggest fraud in the world who's created a great story? Because, you know, when he was starting to tell his story to try to get some belief and some support behind that, he would tell some of these reporters, there's a black box out around Area 51, a black mailbox. And I had never heard this story before. Maybe you have, which is weird because I've watched a lot of these programs and tried to learn more about them. And he would tell them specific dates and times to go to this black mailbox that was just on the outside of Area 51 or Groom Lake. Said, you'll see something tonight. Every single time somebody has gone out there when he's told them to do that, there are sightings in the sky.
Okay. Well, what were they sightings of?
UFOs. Well, but what I mean
are
is,
they testing something?
Maybe they're planes. We don't know. Yeah. It's in the dark of night. You know, nobody's been able to confirm anything they've seen. Where we have some of these sightings and we go, hey, this was a huge spherical object. And much like he talks about too, and what he was reverse engineering was, what we see in our mind is that traditional kind of UFO kind of craft.
The disc with the dome on top.
With a dome. And it was made out of, you know, all the materials that didn't seem to be, you know, made of this earth and things of that nature. And then he's got this new element that they've 115 that they've come up with that I don't know. It's hard to find out anything about that just because of the fact I'm not a scientist. I barely remember the periodic table except for lead.
I almost killed my chemistry partner.
So see, we are not scientists. We are
scraped through that class with a D.
Yeah. So I think that's why he's so fascinating. He's drawn so much interest. But when he's talking about the anti-gravity and the propulsion systems that he did this, remember back in 1989, and then here in 2015, just recently, we see these Navy, you know, the video footage, the Tic Tac and things like that. So now it brings Bob Lazar right back to the front of this issue of, is he telling the truth? And then we go back to the fact of there's nobody ever going to really do that for us. We have to kind of do that and feel good about that or bad about that.
Okay. So I was going to ask you about Element 115, but I also heard that, you know, all the time that he was there and they asked him to reverse engineer their propulsion system?
Their propulsion system, yeah.
He never could figure it out.
Couldn't figure it out.
Okay. So I was right about that.
Felt like it was something that was not of this earth, this world. And it talks about one of the first tests he got into, they brought in an orb and the way somebody just tried to pull out and shake his hand, but with that orb or this object that they had recovered, I'm using air quotes there, that it just pulled his hand back automatically almost. And he describes it as if you had two strong magnets together, what would happen? And at first he didn't get it. He said he just thought somebody was joking around with him. And he was like, no, you don't understand this. And he's like, whoa, wait a minute. You're talking, we talked about anti-gravity and things of that nature in science, but it was all hypothetical. And to him and his eyes now, that was reversed and no longer hypothetical.
But he never could figure out how to do it.
Never cracked the code.
Okay.
I think of it as like the Rubik's Cube, right? Remember how hard that was?
It was impossible.
Yeah. And nowadays you can do it.
I can do one now. It takes me a little while.
Right.
You know Stanton Friedman did not believe him? He's a famous UFO, was a famous ufologist. And he just flat out didn't believe him.
Thought it was all made up.
Yeah. It's like, this guy's, you know, full of baloney.
Right.
Well, he didn't, I don't know exactly what he said. But.
Well, and I feel like his stories have always been very consistent, right? So
yeah,
he could be a huckster. I mean, everything is in the realm of possibility when you're talking on this subject, right?
Right.
You have to look at all the different angles.
Okay. Another thing, if he's the only person to ever come out, how much credibility would he have?
Not very much.
Okay, but there's other people.
Right.
In 1996, there was a 71-year-old. He was a mechanical engineer at Area 51, and he worked on alien technology. But he actually interacted with an alien being known as J-Rod. Have you heard of J-Rod?
I have not heard of J-Rod. I've heard of J-Lo.
There's another J something out there. Because I put in the wrong word, and I got this video, music video. I forgot it. What, it was like J-Lord.
Oh, there you go.
So anyway, this guy was he was building simulators for pilots to train to fly discs under the supervision of J-Rod.
Right.
Yeah. How about that?
That's pretty. See, we find out things all the time now that we didn't know. Just when you think you're kind of getting a grip on Area 51, the best kept secret in the world.
Uh-huh.
Something else kind of comes out, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And you go, well, you know.
Do you have anything else to add about Bob Lazar?
I think I've said this several times, and I think it bears repeating itself, is he's just a fascinating guy. I feel like his story is very consistent.
You recommend his book?
I recommend the book. I think especially if this is a subject that interests you, this is a little bit deeper dive. You know, not too deep. A lot of that stuff is already out there. Like I said, we've seen a lot of documentaries. He was on a very famous podcast several years ago that got millions and millions of views and kind of propped him up. And I think with everything that's going on currently, he's a really important figure. And they even talk about that in the book, that this is why he kind of keeps coming up and why he is still relevant.
So when you read the book, it's not that much of a technical read?
No, it is not.
Because that would put me to sleep.
He'll do some deep dives in some of the things, kind of with his fascination with the Manhattan Project a little bit and things like that. But it doesn't drag on for very long. He kind of gets to the meat and potatoes really quickly. Okay. And I want to add one more thing. When he was working in this area, working with this, he thought it was very fascinating. He said this is where the first kind of red flags came up for him. When they start, they were not allowed to talk to the other teams. There was a definite chain of command set up if there were questions that they wanted answered from other teams, which is very government-like. If you've ever had any kind of, you know, interaction with the government or worked with the government in any way, shape, or form. But that's when he said the red flags really started coming up with him on what really is this and what is happening, you know?
Yeah.
So I would definitely recommend to give it a shot, especially if you are a ufologist.
Oh, yeah. Like me and you.
Right. It's definitely. and outside of the book, like I said, there's plenty of documentaries on Netflix and all these other places that you can find. And I think that's the beautiful thing about where we're at in the world today, is there's so much information to out there that we can go and look and help make those decisions for ourselves.
Do you think there are other areas like Area 51?
You know, it's funny you said that. I read an article just today. There's a whistleblower claiming that there are all kinds of things hidden. Can you guess where?
Area 52?
In our national parks. And he says he has the access codes and everything.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Fantastic.
So look out. That's the next big thing probably to hit.
Well, I looked into it. There's another, like a satellite base to Area 51. It's about 70 miles. It's Tonopah, test range. That's where Paul Benowitz was receiving, intercepting radio signals from the secret alien base at Dulce.
Okay.
back and forth to that. Let's see, what else? The USSR has a place, Kapustin Yar?
I don't speak Russian, but that sounded very Russian of you, Rick.
Kapustin Yar.
There you go.
That's where they tested German rockets, captured German rockets, but there was a UFO crash in 1948. It was taken to Kapustin Yar.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you, comrade.
Yes. So there are other places, other places like Area 51. We just, you know, that's just the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's fascinated everyone's minds for so long. And you know, there's only a select few people that really know what go on in there. And I don't know if it's just for UFOs. I'm a very strong belief that, yes, they probably are testing new flying aircrafts. I think the B-2. Yeah, the B-2 probably came out of that.
I am positive that that's 90% of what they do there.
Right.
So you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, I think we'll wrap it up. It was a great discussion. I'm excited about it. It was great. And as always, if you have a UFO story you'd like to share, love to hear from you. If you want us to look into it, if you want more information about it, send us an email at ufoandalienpodcast@gmail.com. I'm Robert Wiley.
And I'm Rick Black.
We'll see you next week. Thanks.